Hi there, everyone, and welcome to the Photography.ca podcast on Photography.ca. My name is Marco. We are coming to you from Montreal, and today is November 24, 2006. So it's the day before Christmas. We're all having some fun getting ready for the holidays, and I've decided to put together a podcast with fine art photographer Dita Kubin from Montreal. So we actually were able to do a telephone interview together, and you're going to listen to it very shortly. The interview lasts about 20 minutes, so I'm going to get into it right away. And with that, I guess I just want to wish all the listeners the happiest holiday season possible and a happy new year as well. Thanks so much for listening to our shows. We intend to do so many more during 2007, and we're going to do many more interviews, and we'd love to get your comments. So whatever you have to say, send it to us on the blog, by email, on the bulletin board, and it'll be my pleasure to discuss anything you like with you. So happy new year, everyone. And on that note, let's get into the interview now. So I'd like to welcome a really special guest today. Our guest is Dita Kubin, and she is a fine art photographer in Montreal. And I'd like to welcome her to the show, and we're going to ask her a couple questions, and hopefully she'll give us some insight into her art and her activity. So welcome, Dita.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Ah, excellent. Good. Nice. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So first off, you have a very unusual website name for people that want to go and visit your photography, and it's fudge.ca, fudge spelt P-H-U-D-G-E.ca. How in the world did you end up choosing fudge.ca?
Well, what's funny, I guess, is people's reaction to it, because I think that it's pretty obvious. And people often also mispronounce it, and they say fuge. It's pretty funny to me. Actually, it's pretty simple. Fudge, obviously, photography with the PH.
Yeah.
And fudge, well, the idea that it's all just visual dessert, visual pleasures, and not to take it so very seriously, because I think that within sort of this art milieu, there's this tendency to take everything so seriously, and everything has this heaviness about it that I just absolutely didn't want to go there with, you know, art that I was making. And I just wanted it to be kind of a light thing, a very light thing. It's not a brain surgery, you know?
So it's just very, very playful.
Yeah, it is. It is. I find the whole art process to be therapeutic and playful for the individual, and not to get stuck behind the heavy concepts of art.
Excellent. Okay, that's great. Well, thanks for that introduction. So I'd like to get right into it with you. A lot of your photographs, they caught my eye, which is definitely one of the reasons that I contacted you. And I definitely find your photographs somewhat unusual. Is there some way you can describe your creative process a bit?
All right, well, unusual is an interesting adjective. To describe my...
Well, they're unusual, just let me clarify. They're unusual in that they make you look twice. They're just not like regular head and shoulders portraits within an environment. There's other stuff definitely going on, and I guess for that reason it caught my eye. So back to the question, can you describe your process a bit?
I guess you're talking mostly about the last series that I had been working on, and that series I was working on for 2 years. And it actually began originally because I needed a couple of images to donate to an art show. And I had nothing new, and I just decided to photograph someone, and I was just experimenting in ways that I hadn't done before. And when I started to put the image together, all of these really interesting technical elements started coming out, and I had such a fun time working on it that I decided to actually... to try to push this sort of technique that I didn't even know what I was doing at the time, just to push it further and see what I could get out of it. Hmm. So for me, it began very much as a technical exploration. So I didn't really have any preconceived ideas of what I wanted to do. And then when that image kind of made itself, I stood back and I quite enjoyed what the result was, then decided that I would try a couple more portraits in that vein, to see if there was something in it. And then when I had done the next two, I just somehow really opened my eyes and enjoyed so much the process of it that I decided I would do a whole series of that.
And the one, let's talk about one photo in particular, and we're also going to put that as the main photo for this entry in the photography.ca blog.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about the Soma portrait that you did.
Right.
How is that portrait constructed? Could you describe the process a bit for that one in particular?
Well, that one in particular was one of the harder ones that I had made, although considering that this was a two-year project, the ones in the earlier ones were not as elaborate, as complicated, because I wasn't at a place where I understood what I was doing very much. So this was the first very difficult one I had set for myself, thinking, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this, but let's just go and try. Obviously, for the main reason that you can't control smoke and what it's doing.
Yeah.
So I had invited this woman, Shoma, to pose for me. She's a friend of a friend, and just brought sort of props with us to the studio. I rarely shoot in a studio, but I thought that with the smoke and it was still quite cold out, that this was the best place. It was all shot with ambient light, so no flash in that at all. And we just played around with very many different sort of, I would say, compositions, because we were within one setting, so there was not too much we could do with that, and just sort of played. There was no real, again, preconceived idea of what the final image would be, although I had thought that I really wanted to do an image where she was lying on the ground and the smoke was coming up towards me. But that was one thing that I thought would work. It did not at all. I really found myself to be quite smoked very quickly, and it was coming into my face. And, I mean, it was hilarious at the same time, because I just couldn't see anymore. There was so much smoke in my face. Yeah, so we laughed, you know, and then we just continued doing different things. And it ended up that after the shoot was over, I didn't really know what would result from it.
Mm-hmm.
And after I processed my negs, I had my proofs, I started to see what could be possible, that only this idea came out.
Okay.
And so at that point, which is actually how I do all of the portraits, is that I review all of my shots and start to see how I could make work towards a final. And I work with sort of low-res maquettes at first, because there are so many images involved. That I sort of weed out what doesn't work and work my way to a final. And then with the small maquette, I was going in this direction of the final one.
For those, I'm sorry to interrupt, mm-hmm. for those people that don't know what a maquette is, can you give us a quick definition?
Sure, it would just be basically a model to work by. And so what I do is I work different variations, different small-scale models.
Okay.
And then I weed out the ones that are not working visually, or technically, and then I start working towards the ones that do.
Okay.
So they're just like quick working copies, if you will. And then so I started, so this one started to form in front of me. And then you're asking me how exactly was this one made, because so much of the work is post-production.
Yeah, it looks like it might be using more than one photograph. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe that this one, and it's funny, I don't have an exact count for any of them, but this one would be anywhere between 8 and 11 images.
Wow.
That were used to make this one. The idea being that it would be seamless in how it's blended together.
Yep.
But not necessarily seamless that it looks like one single image. The images that I made after this one are more narratives, and obviously they are not always realistic. So you know that it's not made with one image.
Right. Are all the images that you use of the same shoot, or some can be taken from completely different times and places?
Well, I started that it would be just one shoot, and then got into the mindset to be a Puritan, and that I had to use it from one. But again, I was reminded by another artist friend of mine to just not limit what you're making in
okay.
any way. So threw that idea out, and I started using images from other shoots with other people, in fact.
Okay.
I don't do that very often, but sometimes it works, and sometimes I'll have something from a year ago that I shot that has been waiting to be used, and I just don't know in what way, and that was partly the case with this one.
Okay, and these are these blended using something like Photoshop?
Yes, it's all Photoshop.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long would it have taken you to create this particular image?
Well, it's funny because I don't sit down and work at it until I finish. I really need to let them breathe for a while. So this one, what I would have done was I worked on the small maquettes at first, so maybe that would have been a two-day kind of thing, scanning, you know, cleaning them, working maquettes, and then I have to let them sit because I'm not sure in what direction to go into. Then I would, this one I know I left actually for about 2 months. I just really didn't know what to do with it. Yeah. And then when I started to weed out the ones that didn't work and decided on this is the one direction I will go in, then it would be about four solid working days of making the image, but also broken down, not 4 days in a row, because, again, I'll get up to a certain point and not know what to do with it anymore. So I've worked on the face area and then the background, and I don't know what to do with it, so I'm just going to let it sit, maybe do a little printout, hang it on my wall, walk by it for a few days, and then sit down at it again and work it again.
Quite the creative journey. If people were thinking that it was just like a snap, they're absolutely wrong. Or that maybe you set it up in a 3 or 4 hour session, took a snap, then they're completely wrong.
Yeah.
There's like several days of work in this.
Well, what's funny is in the beginning, when I would be showing the images, people would have their reactions and comment on it and think that it's one picture. And my reaction was always, people, I'm working so hard on this one picture.
Yeah.
That isn't obvious at all. However, now I guess I see that that's a compliment if it's seen as a one shot.
I think it is a compliment. It's a testament to the good blending and post-production skills that you have.
Something
definitely.
Like that.
Definitely. And the image, at least from my perspective, is so strong. Yeah, and so unusual technically, because the eyes are sharp and the hands are sharp as well, which for someone more in the know will just obviate the fact that it's more than one image.
Mm-hmm.
But for someone less in the know, or someone just passing it by quickly, to see and feel that it is one image taken on the spot, I guess really is a great compliment to the work that you did to it.
And I think in particular with this image as well, it has a lot of spiritual suggestions.
Definitely.
And not that even that was my intention in the beginning, although in sense, I think for everyone has some sort of a spiritual association. This woman in particular, she's from the States, but her family comes from Bangladesh area.
Okay.
And the incense bowls were a gift to me from a friend of mine who went to India about 5 years ago on a big long trip, and he had gotten these incense little burners from Agra, from a crematory.
Wow.
And brought back 4 of them for me, and I had always thought that they would be so wonderful to use in a shoot, but never knew what or how, and I had just kept them, thinking that one day I'm going to photograph someone with incense with them. So it just kind of came together when I met Shoma and asked her. I found my smoky lady, you know?
And it definitely worked out.
Thank you.
Good. So moving on, I know a lot of our listeners, they are also fine art photographers, and they kind of like to produce art. Some of the questions for people that are just starting is, can I live off my art? Is this something that is going to sustain me? So I guess you're definitely a fine art photographer yourself. So I guess we'd like to ask you, you know.
Do I ask myself the same question?
Do you ask yourself the
every
same?
Every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Every day.
How difficult is it to, let's say, sell fine art photography and make a living from selling your artwork?
Well, I suppose that it is different in North America than it would be in other places in the world.
Such as places in Europe, perhaps?
Europe definitely embraces their artists more. Not that I have any firsthand knowledge, but I do have other artist friends who have said that to me. But also, I do come from Eastern Europe, and I would have thought it would have been easier here to go that route. But I don't even think it's so much geographical. I just find that people in general are not very supported to do art in a very sort of life career kind of way.
Mm.
I know very few, for for instance, friends whose families have supported them in that route. There's always this projected fear of not being able to survive in it. So already, in wanting to go into art, we have that projected fear on us, which we project on ourselves and onto others as well. That definitely doesn't help people making the decision to go into artwork.
Yeah.
And that's something that I probably still do struggle with in some level in my life. But there did come a point where I just couldn't do all the other stuff that I didn't want to be doing in life, and I knew that this is what I wanted to be doing now.
Right.
And so I find that having made that decision, the rest, it's really just making that one decision. You know, the momentum after that one decision starts to go forward. Then things start to come to you once you've made that decision. But being in the indecisive place doesn't offer up opportunities for you to go there and do that. So back to your question, is it difficult to survive in this? See, I think that it's not, but it has been made to be that way.
Right.
I find that it's a little bit easier now than it was 2-3 years ago for myself. That's also, you know, in the early stages of you doing art, your art isn't worth as much as it would be in the future.
For sure.
That's a part of it. And certainly there is real, I mean, people are buying it just because they like it for themselves or as gifts for other people. There is no further commercial value in it than that.
Right, right. Are you finding you're able to sell more pieces as months go on, as people see your work?
Absolutely, absolutely. And maybe that's the thing that has surprised me. I mean, I know that that's how it would work. But again, having the fears that we can't survive, you know, how are you gonna live? That when it does happen, I'm always surprised that somebody would want to pay for it.
Right.
And then I'm not surprised. Yeah, of course. That's why I've been working so hard on that and not on other things. So it makes sense to me.
Well, it's definitely nice to hear, and I suspect that a lot of our listeners will be happy to hear that as well. And I think you're absolutely right. It is a matter of passion, really, and saying, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do. Let me go full force at it. You know, I guess someone can try it and fail. Everyone does fail occasionally. But if you don't give it your all and you don't give it a shot, you'll never know.
Sure.
And especially when you've kind of developed a certain style for yourself and you really appreciate that style and you explore it, I guess if you put your heart and soul into it, it's going to work. Just don't quit. If you quit, it's definitely going to fail. I mean,
I think the other thing is the motivation behind doing artwork. I have met people who are motivated to do it for fame and money.
Right, right.
Or even, let's just say, fame or recognition or to leave some kind of a legacy behind.
Yeah.
I find that whenever that has been my motive, it never works out. And in fact, when the motive is simply to express that thing that you have to express inside, that is when things happen. Yeah, in the art making process and also in what you get out of it in return.
So back to our original question, do you do any other photographic work as well, or is it always working on your artwork?
No, I am. I'm doing a little bit of commercial photography.
Yeah.
I would say very little. I never look for it. So only when I get called to do something, and then it has to sort of fit in with what I'm doing in general, then I would do it. Like, let's say, private portraits for people. I pretty much don't do any kind of advertising work at all.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much private portraiture.
And another important question that we like to ask, I always get these by email, what equipment do you use? So for all the gearheads out there who are dying to ask you this question, what gear do you use, Dita?
Sure, whatever I can get my hands on.
Are you shooting mostly traditional photography? Are you shooting more digital photography at the outset before processing it?
No, everything is shot on film. Okay. And in fact, I find myself to be very fortunate that I'm still from the old school photo world.
Yep.
So everything was wet lab. And I process my own black and white at home. send the color out. But basically, I do shoot on almost anything I can. The series that the image Shoma came from was shot on 35 with F90X, you know, Nikon camera.
I'd like to say I have that camera, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
We didn't discuss this in advance, but I love that camera.
Yeah, no, I really do as well, and I came upon it because it was actually one of the cameras they used on a film set.
Okay.
As a prop. They had purchased 10 of them, and then they were selling them off, so I really came into a very good deal, and that's why I bought it.
Excellent.
But it's also a camera that, for instance, I let one of my other photography friends use, so she's working with it all the time.
Yeah.
Very much into lending and helping out, you know, helping each other out in that sense. And so this series was also shot on Agfa film.
Yep.
Because for me, I had wanted to do things like this for about 6 years. I had applied for grants, always got rejected, and, you know, took it personally at first. And then I just thought, well, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to let something like that get in the way of me working on a project. So decided that I would fund it myself. So what's the cheapest way that I could do it? What's the cheapest film I could buy? What's the cheapest way I could process it, you know, scan it, and work on it?
And when they're finally printed, are they printed via inkjet from a lab? What's the final result?
Yeah, they are inkjet prints using, you know, the most archival inks that are out there, also printed on archival paper. That would be the limited series edition that I have.
Okay.
Because I have really decided to go that route and you know, limit the production of it.
For those that are thinking of possibly doing something similar with their own projects, would you be able to suggest what paper you're using?
Oh, you know what? I wouldn't, because everyone likes something else, and I've gone through, like, for instance, I bought the most expensive paper you can possibly buy on Earth.
Okay.
And after starting to print, I really didn't like it.
Okay.
Which other people swear by that paper. So it's not for me, but it works for other people. And I'm now still in the process of finding something that I really want to stay with.
So the papers that you use vary from image to image?
Well, they vary not too much. They vary a little bit because I'm still in the process of trying to find the best route for me, but that's also talking about black and white images. You know, I really like a paper that has a very pure white in it,
yep.
And I find that a lot of the digital papers out there are a little bit creamy,
okay,
which lowers the contrast of your image. And for me, I really like, I need to have my whites to be white.
Okay.
So that would be the perfectionist in me that doesn't like the most expensive paper on Earth.
Okie doke. And I guess we've taken a lot of your time. I don't want to continue too much longer. So I guess I'd just like to ask you, you know, at the end, are you having any upcoming exhibitions? Where can people, besides fudge.ca, where else could people see some more of your work?
Well, at the present moment, I had just finished an exhibition in November and packed it up, and I'm now looking for other places to exhibit in.
Okay.
And this would be this series, The Recollections. So I'm at the place now where I'm sending out my dossier to other you know, artist-run galleries and whatnot, and starting my new series. So at the moment, I don't have it up anywhere.
Okay.
I am looking, and as soon as I find a place, I will have it up on my website.
Excellent, excellent. And if you send me a link once you do have it done, maybe I'll be able to put that in the show notes as well.
Okay.
A little bit of a sneak peek, maybe. Are we able to? What will the next set of work be dedicated to?
Actually, I think that it's going to be, there are two things that I'm very interested to work on, and one will be a continuation of this project.
Okay.
But in color.
Oh.
Curious what that has to tell me. And the other one is I am looking to go travel to get out of town for a little bit.
Yep.
And to continue a little bit of a sort of a series of squares that I've been working on that actually are very abstract and have no people in them and are just sort of almost abstract colors, horizons, that kind of thing. So I'm curious. That one I haven't really worked out very much.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we'll look forward to it, definitely. So I guess I'd like to take this moment to thank you, Dita, for agreeing to do this podcast with us.
Thank you very much, Marco.
It was totally a pleasure, and I know a lot of our visitors are going to get a lot out of it.
Thank you very much.
So thanks again, and we do hope that you will send us an update as well.
I will.
Thanks, Dita.
Thank you.
And so that was our interview with Montreal fine art photographer Dita Kubin. I certainly hope you enjoyed the interview. Hope you learned a few interesting things. I know I did. And we intend to do more interviews in the new year. I'd like to take this opportunity once again to wish everyone happy holidays and happy new year. Hope everyone is healthy and well and gets whatever they want. Please, as always, leave some comments in the blog or on the bulletin board, or you can shoot me emails at photography.ca@gmail.com. It's my pleasure to hear from you. So take care, everyone. Be well, and we'll be putting more stuff out in 2007. Bye for now.